I imagine death so much it feels more like a memory. Is this where it gets me? On my feet, several feet ahead of me. Do I run or fire my gun or let it be? There is no beat, no melody. Burr, my first friend, my enemy. Maybe the last face I ever see. If I throw away my shot, is this how you'll remember me? What if this bullet is my legacy? Legacy! What is a legacy? It's planting seeds in a garden you never get to see. What I just quoted is an excerpt from the hit musical Hamilton. Hamilton was written by a man named Lin-Manuel, who's written a lot of the musicals of this day. And he is so brilliant in how he inserts themes. So for all of you that have seen Hamilton, there are themes throughout it of ambition, of satisfaction, legacy, remembrance. There are a bunch of different themes that he inserts in it. And throughout all of his songs, he draws this beautiful thread. And Hamilton is definitely this character who is driven, ambitious, highly motivated. Pretty much nothing can deter him. He will achieve what he wants to. One of the most driven people portrayed. And the difficulty with this is that I think he has the wrong definition of legacy. I mean, he has come from a horrible situation, and now he is in America trying to make something of himself. But for him, it is to be remembered. It is that when he dies, he will be remembered. It will be his name in lights. He will be praised for all he did while he was alive and then after he's dead. Well, what I just quoted is actually a scene from one of the last songs. It's the second to last song. And there is a bullet hurtling towards Hamilton, and time freezes. And he steps out of body to give this monologue. And he starts asking questions, right? He says, if I throw away my shot, this one life that he lives that he thinks he has to fill with so much, that he always has to accomplish, that he has to build this long resume. He says, if I throw away my shot, is this how you're going to remember me? What if this bullet is my legacy? And then he asks the question, finally, he asks the question, legacy, what is a legacy? But I think he sees it for what it truly is in this moment. When the life is flashing before his eyes, he sees it for what it truly is. It's planting seeds in a garden you never get to see. It's not about building a name for yourself. In fact, you won't even know when you're dead. Who remembers you? And in fact, thousands of years go by, you will definitely not be remembered. Maybe even 100 years go by, you won't be remembered. And so what is a legacy about, right? It's planting seeds in a garden you never get to see. So I bring this up twofold. First, it relates to the sermon. But also, we are starting Leaving a Legacy. We're starting that next week. And I want us to continue to pray about this opportunity, but I also want us to hold the right mind about it. We don't participate in leaving a legacy so that our name will be remembered, because it won't. It's not about the plaque on the church where we'll put your name in bronze and then people will walk by and say, ah, that person donated some good money. It's not about that. What it is, it's about planting seeds in a garden, and you will probably never see them bloom, but you trust a God who has been faithful time and time again, who will water and tend it and reap a harvest one day. That's what we do. We trust a God. And so it's planting seeds. That's our aim here. When we talk about leaving a legacy, it's planting seeds. And we're trusting God to grow it. And so it's already been said. I'm not going to have to repeat it a lot because we spent some time. But we ask you to pray. That's all we ask. We're not asking for anything at this moment. We just ask you to pray. Prepare your hearts. It's none of it's going to some vacation. It's not going to salary budgets. It's not going to, it's going to pay off this building. We're being very transparent about it, but please pray. Prepare your hearts for it. Now we get into the actual sermon. We are in a series through the book of Ecclesiastes, and we're going to go verse by verse, and we are going to cover this book. And it is notably one of the more depressing books at first glance. But it's all about purpose. It's about why we exist. And we answer that question, and sometimes it feels like it's really hard to answer it. Or it's really easy, but it's hard to like feel confident in your answer, right? Because life has to be more than the next Amazon shipment, or it has to be more than the next vacation or the promotion, and then you work until you retire, and then eventually you die. It's got to be more. There's nothing wrong with vacations. I hope you guys go, and I hope you enjoy them. I will love every vacation I go on. It's in my nature. But these things were never designed to fully satisfy us. They don't work that way. And so in this book, in Ecclesiastes, there's one word used multiple times. It's the word hevel. In our Bibles, it's translated as vanity or futility or meaningless. Its literal meaning, though, the word hevel, is vapor or breath, which is why we named this sermon series Vapor Trails. What it means is that these things that we seek, the next Amazon shipment or the vacation, as I mentioned, these aren't worthless in and of themselves, but they're temporary. So if you try to find your value and meaning in life, your purpose in life, by these things, you will be incredibly disappointed. They're temporary. And on top of that, hevel means that life doesn't work the way we think it should. Life is pretty much an enigma. You can have some expectation for how it's going to work, and it doesn't work that way. And so if you will, think of sitting around a bonfire. Sitting around a bonfire, and there's this thick smoke that comes off of it, right? If you're around a big enough one, right? There's this thick smoke that comes off of it. And it looks so tangible. It looks so physical that you could reach out and grab a hold of it. But the moment you do that, what happens? It's gone. It's gone. And the thing is, I think it works that way with so many things that we seek for our meaning in life. It's reaching out, and it lasts for 1 second, and then it's gone. And we continuously try to do that, and the author of this book will continue to remind us that it's chasing after the wind. It is pursuing things that you'll ultimately never catch. And so we need to remember, as we established last week, God is most glorified in us when we are most satisfied in him. So we worship the creator and not the creation. So the book of Ecclesiastes is written by, we're going to say Solomon for our sake. There's arguments to be made for other writers, but a lot of what we see and what we can read pertains to Solomon. The author calls himself the preacher, actually, in verse 1, and that word is Koheleth. It's this preacher, a teacher, somebody teaching out of wisdom. And so Solomon, as just a quick refresher, is the king who prays to God for wisdom and actually receives it. So that's why this book, Ecclesiastes, falls into the wisdom literature, is because it is actually God's wisdom written and recorded. And so Solomon's seeking to help us see through the correct lens. And you ask, what lens is that? In a world where everything is temporary and unfulfilling, it should be our comfort to seek a God who stays and satisfies. In essence, the author wants us to see how flimsy every place that we go to seek meaning, purpose, value, and life is if it's apart from God. Because God is permanent. And he gifts us with the ability to enjoy things unlike the rest of the world. We have the ability to enjoy all these things we're going to talk about today. We have the ability to enjoy them. But it's God who enables us to have that ability. And so it's commonly said that he tries these different things. So we're going to see what the author runs to in this chapter today, right? What does he run to in Ecclesiastes 2? So let's start here. Verse 1, I said to myself, go ahead. I will test you with pleasure. Enjoy what is good. But it turned out to be futile. I said about laughter, it is madness. About pleasure, what does it accomplish? I explored with my mind the pull of wine on my body. That rhymed. My mind still guiding me with wisdom and how to grasp folly. until I could see what is good for people to do under heaven during the few days of their lives. So what does he try first? Pleasure. He tries pleasure. He tries everything that he knows to be pleasurable. And just so we also are clear in this, Solomon is a very wealthy, he's a king, he's very powerful, so he has the resources to go try all of these different things, right? In seasons of life, he's saying, I tried everything I know to be pleasurable. And yet he asks the question, what does this accomplish? What does this truly accomplish? Because maybe it makes him feel good for a second. What does this actually accomplish? And his answer is nothing. So if I can be real a second, and I'm speaking predominantly from my point of view, my life, I always feel this pull to pleasure. And I think on top of it, you have, as I've mentioned before, the John Mark Comer Live No Lies. You have the enemy, the world, and your very own body pushing this narrative, pushing this idea on you that pleasure is the highest good. That when you've had this bad day, we should definitely do something that, you know, makes you feel instantly good, right? And so maybe it's abusing some kind of substance. Or maybe it is big shopping sprees. Something that seems innocent enough, but right? It's you go do those things for the hit. And there's nothing wrong with shopping, right? But you're trying to gratify yourself quickly. Or maybe it's something in the intimacy category. And I'll leave it there. But the issue with this fix is it's temporary in nature. It's temporary in nature. So one minute we're riding the high, and then the next, the dopamine's worn off, and we are left with the same issues and the same pain. Fixing pain with pleasure is like a bullet hole with a Band-Aid. If you can think of that illustration, you've got a bullet hole in your chest, and you put a Band-Aid over it. By appearance, that issue is fixed, right? You can't see the hole anymore, so it's probably good, right? You're not thinking about it for a second. Maybe the blood's being soaked up for that 1 second. But soon enough, that blood is going to leak from under that Band-Aid, and you will realize the wound is still there. It's the flaw of pleasure, because pleasure is pretty much inherently going to be instant gratification every time. So not all pleasure is bad. I'm not saying that. Not all pleasure is bad. But for it to be our fix is wrong. It's insufficient. So pleasure is not enough. It's not the solution. In a world where everything is temporary and unfulfilling, it should be our comfort to seek a God who stays and satisfies. He is permanent and he is reigning over it all. So then the author, Solomon Koheleth, says, I increased my achievements. I built houses and planted vineyards for myself. I made gardens and parks for myself and planted every kind of fruit tree in them. I constructed reservoirs for myself from which to irrigate a grove of flourishing trees. I acquired male and female servants and had slaves who were born in my house. I also own livestock, large herds, and flocks, more than all who were before me in Jerusalem. I also amassed silver and gold for myself and the treasure of kings and providences. I gathered male and female singers for myself and many concubines, the delights of men. So recap real quick. In summary, he gathers achievements, houses, vineyards, gardens, parks, servants, livestock, treasures and wealth, concubines. Do you think he's got enough, right? He gathers everything he can think of. And he says, so I became great and surpassed all who were before me in Jerusalem. My wisdom also remained with me. All that my eyes desired, I did not deny them. I did not refuse myself any pleasure, for I took pleasure in all my struggles. This was my reward for my struggles. When I considered all that I had accomplished and what I had labored to achieve, I found everything to be futile in a pursuit of the wind. There was nothing to be gained under the sun. So the next thing he tries is to accumulate everything he can and find pleasure in them, and yet there's still a flaw in the possessions. I mean, when I hear that whole list of everything he has, I'm like, man, he's got to be living the life. The same way that we would look at some celebrity or some really rich person, and we would say, man, they've got to be happy. Like, they've got the jacuzzi. Like, this is what goes through my head. I'm like, man, when we finally get our hot tub on our back deck, like, I'll be happy. Or, like, when we can finally have that that awesome couch or that awesome whatever. I'm like, then we're making it. We're finally progressing, right? But he says, I had everything I could want. Everything. And yet, here's his conclusion. I found everything to be futile or meaningless. And I found it a chasing after the wind. Chasing something that you will never catch. It didn't fulfill him. So he did not deny himself any pleasure, any possession. And yet with all he had, he still felt empty. And so how often does our life revolve around the next? Instead, wouldn't it be so much better? And I say this as a rhetorical, but I feel this very much deep inside of me. Wouldn't it be so much better if we could view each and every day as a gift? It's a challenge, but what if we could view each and every day as a gift? Each and every meal as a gift. Each and every thing that we own as a gift. Each and every breath as a gift from God. Then doesn't it give all the things that we have so much more value? We get to enjoy it as a gift from Him. Which means it's not our fulfillment. We don't run to it to fill some void in us. Instead, we get to praise the Lord who's given it to us. God gives us the ability to enjoy the possessions that we have. Our mistake is when we look to them for fulfillment. When we forget the one who gave and acts like we deserve it and own it. In a world where everything is temporary and unfulfilling, it should be our comfort to seek a God who stays and satisfies. Next, Solomon Koheleth, the author, I'm going to say all three because they're interchangeable in this, says, then I turn to consider wisdom, madness, and folly, for what will the king's successor be like? He will do what has already been done. And I realize that there is an advantage to wisdom over folly, like the advantage of light over darkness. The wise person has eyes in his head, but the fool walks in darkness. Yet I also knew that one fate comes to them both. And you ask, what is that fate? So I said to myself, what happens to the fool will also happen to me. Why then have I been overly wise? And I said to myself that this is also futile. For just like the fool, there is no lasting remembrance for the wise. Since in the days to come, both will be forgotten. How is it that the wise person dies just like the fool? And now you're sitting here thinking, okay, this sounds like Hamilton, because it does. And so he concludes with this, therefore I hated life, because the work that was done under the sun was distressing to me, for everything is futile in a pursuit of the wind. So like Hamilton that I referenced in the beginning, wisdom for the sake of legacy or fame or remembrance is foolish. It's not very much wisdom. Because everything that is not rooted in God is futile, meaningless. And so in the end, no matter how wise one is or is not, how much they do or do not accomplish, how much pleasure one has or does not have, the same event happens to them all. They die. And now you're like, okay, Ecclesiastes definitely sounds dismal. It is definitely a little depressing. And I understand where that comes from. But hang on with me. If death ends it all, then this life is robbed of true meaning. Because even our greatest accomplishments of this world are unbelievably temporary and therefore ultimately meaningless. So if we live for our achievements, if we live for our own wisdom to boast, some kind of remembrance, any of that stuff, it doesn't matter. We're living for the wrong thing. So we cannot live for the praises of men while we're alive or after we're gone, because these things will ultimately not last. Galatians 1:10 says, Am I now trying to win the approval of man or of God? Or am I trying to please men? If I were still trying to please men, I would not be a servant of Christ. We live for the audience of one. And it's not the praises of men that we live for. If we get them, awesome. But that should be secondary. In a world where everything is temporary and unfulfilling, it should be our comfort to seek a God who stays and satisfies. And then Solomon says this, I hated all of my work that I labored at under the sun because I must leave it to the one who comes after me. And who knows whether he'll be wise or a fool. yet he will take over all my work that I labored at skillfully under the sun. This too is futile. And I just picture Solomon looking at his kids like, dang, I got to leave my work to these idiots. Like, how is that going to work? And you're like, but he continues. So I began to give myself over to despair concerning all of my work that I labored at under the sun. When there is a person whose work was done with wisdom, knowledge, and skill, and he must give his portion to a person who has not worked for it, this too is futile and a great wrong. For what does a person get with all his work and all his effort that he labors at under the sun? For all his days are filled with grief, and his occupation is sorrowful. Even at night, his mind does not rest. This too is futile. And so the preacher, Solomon, fears that his work will be left to a fool. And unfortunately, his fears come true. If you read the narrative of the Bible, the historical narrative, you see that Solomon actually does end up leaving his role as king and all the stuff that he's worked for and attained. He leaves it to a man named Rehoboam, who turns out to be a fool in many ways. And so this fear that he has, that he's talking about here, comes true for him. Does it always? No. I mean, it says, who knows whether he'll be wise or a fool? You don't. You don't know how they're going to handle what you had. You don't know how the work ethic is going to be. You just don't. And yet death comes for us all, and we must see that as the great equalizer. So then here is his conclusion. Here is his final conclusion. This is what kind of puts meat on the bone a little bit, right? We've been whittling away saying, this is meaningless, this is meaningless. Here we go. There is nothing better for a person than to eat, drink, and enjoy his work. I've seen that even this is from God's hand, because who can eat and who can enjoy life apart from him? For to the person who is pleasing in his sight, he gives wisdom, knowledge, and joy. But to the sinner, he gives the task of gathering and accumulating in order to give to the one who is pleasing in God's sight. This too is futile and a pursuit of the wind. Do you guys catch what just happened there? To the one who is pleasing in God's sight, to the one who is found in God, whose identity, whose purpose, whose value, whose meaning comes from God alone, will be given knowledge, wisdom. He will be given that purpose. But to the sinner, the one who is without God, the one who does not know the Lord, his task is gathering and accumulating, and it's not the punishment. It's actually just what he reaps on himself. Because this sinner will run from thing to thing to try to find what fulfills him, the same way Solomon talked about. He will gather these possessions, hoping that the next thing is the one that finally pushes them over the edge to a happy, good life. And eventually, he'll just leave it to the next person to do the task. This too is futile and a pursuit of the wind. So what do we do now? Well, he says, eat, drink, and enjoy the work. Enjoy what we have. The gifts of God only satisfy when we understand the source of the gifts. Then we are grateful, thankful, and he gives us the ability to enjoy what he has given. He also sets up guardrails, but that's because he's God, right? He sets up guardrails so that we might enjoy well. Everything is useless and empty. That's his conclusion number one. Everything is useless and empty. Conclusion number two, we all die. But conclusion number three, the better truth, we must be content with what we have and enjoy our work. So it's not about being satisfied in what we could get. Man, instead, it is to view what God has given us as a gift. And to be content with it. And then as a result, we enjoy it. As a result, we enjoy it. Except that we have no control in the midst of a life of hevel, in the midst of a life of unpredictability, and we just trust God. Because he's the one that created it. He's the one that can put chaos into order, and so we trust him. God gave us the unique ability to enjoy things of this world to his glory. So when I talk about pleasure, possessions, work, we actually do have the ability to enjoy them. Solomon is not saying, like, universally, like, everything is horrible. We'll never be able to enjoy anything. Why live this life? He's saying, if you think that's going to be it for you, like, if you think this is finally it and you're going to have a great life just finding the next Amazon shipment. Yes, I love online shopping. If you're going to find it in the next Amazon shipment, then you're going to be really disappointed. God is most glorified when we are most satisfied in him. So it's all about purpose. Is our purpose in this world and what we can make out of it, or is it in God enjoying the things that he made? I had this thought as I was kind of driving here this morning. We say, like, we are going to run to this thing, right? So, like, let me run to this relationship. Let me run to this achievement because it's like, I want this thing to fulfill me. But the notion of running, the idea of running is urgency. It's immediacy. It's like, I need this to immediately, I need to be there. Like, I'm anxious without this thing. So I better hope it fulfills me. But what if instead of runners, instead of us always being the runners trying to find the next thing, we're sprinting from thing to thing to thing to thing to thing to thing to thing, we were walkers. I mean, think of the pace of a walk. To walk is calm. It's fulfilled. It's content. It says, I don't need that thing immediately. So what if instead of we were runners, we were walkers? The walkers that were so satisfied in God that we walk to each next thing. We walk to the vacation. Because at that vacation is good things that we get to enjoy, but we don't need it. Right? We walk to the next relationship, the next achievement, the next promotion, because it's awesome if we get it. But we're content in God. We are unmoved. So calm and content. In a world where everything is temporary and unfulfilling, it should be our comfort to seek a God who stays and satisfies. Bow your heads with me, if you will. Heavenly Father,